And now, a bit of romance.
Two girls on a quest to find which rom-com is the best. P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Hello, and welcome to P.S. I Love Rom-Coms, the podcast about Sunday brunches, romantic hunches, and girlfriends who want you to do crunches. We're your hosts. I'm Mia.
And I'm Allie. P.S. I Love Rom-Coms is a rom-com review podcast where each week, me and I try to answer the question, which rom-com is the best rom-com of all time? And if we have to search through every kitchen drawer to find that answer, we'll do it.
Oh, I love that so much. That's such a great specific for the movie. Now, we like to start off each episode with a little segment called Which Rom-Com Hero or Heroine Are You Channeling? Where we equate the experiences we had this week with a famous rom-com hero or heroine. And I can start us off. This week, I am channeling the character whose name is Becky, played by Rachel McAdams from the film Morning Glory, where she plays like a very sort of exhausted like news executive who's like kind of trying to date, but like mostly focusing on her job. And I am experiencing a little something called burnout, which I've never had before.
Oh, no.
Not to this degree, where I just had like a very intense like 2 weeks of work that were absolutely fantastic, but were exhausting. And I'm like in week two of being like, I am still not rested and I'm working on it. And I finally have like figured out what I need to do to like get rested. But I'm channeling Becky because it's like Becky's sort of like trying to date that guy in the movie whose name is...
what's his name? He's just handsome.
He's that handsome guy.
He's not
even coming up. Yeah, Becky's trying to date this guy and she's just like very tired and busy. And at one point, it's like runs out of like the house without her pants on. You know, she's like constantly. And that's kind of me. It's like I'm sort of like, a new thing starting. And I just like I'm like constantly like so exhausted. And then I'm like, I have to leave immediately and like go take care of my dog. It's like my life's just kind of in shambles. So sort of trying to be like fun and datey, but while being sort of like exhausted and overwhelmed and like figuring out your life. So I really identify with her and I get it. And I'm working through it. I am on the other side. I think I'm on like an upward swing, which is nice, but I definitely identify with her this week. But that's what I'm channeling. Allie, who are you channeling?
Oh, that's such a good channel. I imagine you just blowing bangs out of your forehead constantly, being like,
that's how I feel. And I just feel like she's like in the movie just being like, sorry, I'm being insane. That's how I feel right now. It's like I'm just like, I'm so tired that I can't hide my unhinged qualities. And I'm being like, sorry, I'm being this way already. Can't hide it because I'm that tired. But that's who I'm channeling. But Allie, who are you channeling?
This week, I'm channeling the character of Ben Reitman from the rom-com Fever Pitch. That's Jimmy Fallon's character. And, you know, the character of Ben is pretty immature. He's a lot of growing up to do. Like, he still has, you know... all of his stuff is kind of like Red Sox stuff. He is, you know, very much of a child. And I am also kind of a one-act Ben right now because I for the first time ever, after my parents were like, Allie, please just get contacts. I finally got contacts for the first time ever.
Oh my God, Allie.
Yeah.
Oh my God, how was it?
Pretty embarrassing. I went to the optometrist and I was like, I'd like to get contacts. And she's like, wait, is this the first time you've ever gotten contacts? And I went, yeah. And she's like, how old are you? And I was like, I'm 29. And she's like, okay, well, I think you'll really enjoy them. Because my eyesight is really bad, Mia. And so...
I'm so shocked. I wish I was you, though. I got them so young that I can't wear them now. So I'm so jealous you're just getting them. That's fantastic.
They're incredible. But this thing that nobody told me is like... That they have to teach you how to put them on at the optometrists. And so like...
Oh my God, yeah.
There I was in my optometrist is Costco. I go to Costco. There I was in the Costco eye doctor office trying to put these contacts in and like a really nice, you know, cute... My cute optometrist was like, coaching me through it. And I just could not do it, Mia. And it was so embarrassing. Oh my God. It took me so long.
So hard.
It's so hard. And no one tells you anything. And they're like, can you, and she was like, can you open your eye wider? And I was like, I can't. And then she's like, well, I have another appointment coming in. So. And so I just had to sit there. And while this, you know, second, of course, handsome young man is getting his eyes checked, oh, I'm there in the corner trying to like jam a contact in my eye. And it took me, she was on her fourth appointment of the day by the time I got my contacts in, because I had to take I had to take a break because she's like, your eyes are turning red because you're poking them so hard. Give them a break.
I'm so sorry. Walk around. I'm honestly triggered by this. Like, you're, because you're reminding me when I was like nine and had to do this, and it was so embarrassing. I'm so sorry that I had to do that.
I felt like a kid again. It was like, wow, I haven't been like, you know, this embarrassed in so long. But I finally got them in, and I have to say, wow, 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 they are incredible.
Oh my God. Congrats. Oh my God. Do like leaves look different to you now?
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
Like a tree.
I looked at this tree with a bunch of leaves and I almost started crying because I was
oh my God, of course, it's shocking.
It was like, oh my God, I didn't realize there was so much texture in the world. And
there's just something different about having it be on your actual eyeball that you can just see shit like a lot easier.
It felt like Spider-Man, like that movie, like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man where he gets the spidey senses and he no longer needs his glasses and he's like, what? It was like, I have spidey senses now. I can see like the texture of the sidewalk. I can see like a car driving hundreds of feet away and I can read the license plate. It's insane.
Oh my God, I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
And honestly, this is the angle we should be taking on glasses to contacts rom-com. Not, oh, look how much better she looks. It's, oh, look at how much more she can see.
Yeah, look how her quality of life has just improved exponentially.
Oh my God, Allie, congratulations. I'm so happy for you. I absolutely had that experience 20 years ago. And I'm just so happy for you that you're having it right now.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And speaking of things that can give us a new perspective on how we look at things, should we get into our movie discussion?
Yes. Incredible segue.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
This week, we watched the 2013 rom-com Enough Said. In this film, Eva, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, a divorced single parent, seems generally happy but dreads her daughter's departure for college. Unexpectedly, Eva begins a romance with Albert, played by James Gandolfini, a nice man with who she has a lot in common. Meanwhile, Eva finds a new friend in Marianne, played by Katherine Keener, a poet who is just about perfect, except for one thing. She constantly denigrates her ex-husband, who just so happens to be Albert, the man Eva is dating. Bah, bah,
oh my
bah.
God.
The more Eva hears, the more she doubts her relationship with Albert.
Enough Said was written and directed by Nicole Holofcener. Sadly, James Gandolfini died almost a year after filming was completed and before the movie was released. Oh my God, that's so sad.
Isn't
oh my
so
God,
sad?
And he's so fantastic in it.
Yeah.
And he never saw the finished film and the movie was dedicated to him. James Gandolfini was initially dubious about taking the part of Albert as he didn't feel it was a natural fit for him. Ironically, he got some of the best notices of his career for his performance in the film. Oh my God, yeah. Allie, man, that breaks my heart.
I knew it was
his last film, but I didn't know he didn't see it. And he's so good in it.
He's so
great in it.
Good in it. And it is so sad.
I love him in it.
No, I absolutely loved his performance. And this was actually my first time seeing this movie too.
Your first time seeing it.
What did you think? I loved it. It was, you know, there are many things that surprised me about it. Number one, the fact that it was written in 2013. I mean, like,
Oh my God.
This movie was so ahead of its time, I feel like. And
1,000%.
That was one thing that surprised me. And another was like how incredible James and Julia's chemistry was. It was so
good
and real. It was so, they were just magnetic. It was so great. And, you know, people have been recommending this film to me before, and I just have like put it off. And I was like, oh, it looks like kind of like an indie rom-com, which is what it is. But it's much more than that too. I mean, like the cast is incredible. It's like Toni Collette and Catherine Keener. And it's just like heavy A-list actors and taking like a really real in-depth look at dating, divorce, like dating when you're older, dating post-divorce, like, and it brought up some themes that I haven't seen in rom-coms, and I personally have never thought of, just because I've never been married and therefore never been divorced. But
right.
It brought up like how after you were divorced, it is scary to get in a new relationship. And, you know, I've had bad breakups and I know it's scary to get into a new relationship, but I can't even imagine, you know, it's just kind of next level stuff. And like, how do you, you know, like will yourself to do that again? And how do you, I'm sure you want to like protect yourself. Like Eva's character wanted to protect herself. And it was so good. Mia, have you seen this movie before?
Oh my God. I have. And Allie, I love everything you said about it. Cause I just agree. I think it's such a special film. And yeah, so I saw it in 2013. And let me take you on just a little nostalgic moment. I like in my college, I was in college, and my college arts theater, the Bijou, was screening it. And I went there and sort of sat in a big armchair and watched it with a friend and just felt like which is my happy place. I just love to be at an art house theater watching indie films. Watching indie rom-coms. So I had the best time seeing it, and which made me be like, I saw it was on HBO Max, so and we were talking about movies, and I was like, oh, we should watch it. I've said it's so great, but it has been, I guess, almost 10 years. I completely forgot how uncomfortable it gets at the end of the second act. It's so fucking uncomfortable. And I'm so sorry. I didn't even warn you, Allie. I was like, yeah, I love this movie. but even rewatching it though, like I loved it so much. And I will say for many reasons, but after the last two films we watched in a row, some of the films we've watched recently have had sort of like somewhat like just like typical flat lighting for some reason. And just, I love the way that Nicole Holofcener Senior makes her films. Like I love Friends with Money. I think it's such an interesting movie. So even just physically, like aesthetically, the way this movie looks, I adore and I'm obsessed with. It's like, I feel like it's like a dark twist on a Nancy Meyers, and I love it. You know, it's like a more twisty Nancy Meyers, and I adore it. So I love the way it looks. I completely agree, Allie. I was now seeing it on the other side where I was in college at the time, absolutely could not relate to what these specific people were going through. And I, as someone who's still never been married or divorced, like, of course, I can't know what exactly they're feeling. But I will say the thing that stood out to me is like now as a single adult dating and getting to know people for the first time on dates, like their energy when they're first getting to know each other. It captures this very specific phenomena when you're on a date and you don't know the other person that well and you're starting to make jokes. Yes. Or there's something in Julia Louis-Dreyfus's eyes where she's like laughing but unsure but terrified, and they're like trying to understand if like the other person, they're like, what are we doing? We don't know. And it's like all kind of on a razor's edge of like, is this funny or is this crazy or awkward? I don't know. And I was blown away. I've never seen that so succinctly portrayed in a film in that way.
You're so, and it's just kind of right.
Right?
That date, that's exactly incredible. What that, in the the like timing of it was so good, because you're right, Mia, that's exactly what was happening in their first date. You know, they're both divorced and they both have, both Eva and Albert are both divorced, and they both, they've been divorced for a while, and they both have a, they both each separately have a daughter that's going to college, and they're like learning each other's communication styles. And it's so, it's such, yeah, like they're doing this careful dance where like somebody will like say something. It's usually like Julia will say something, she'll like make a joke, and then there'll be like a moment of like awkward silence, and then like Albert will make a joke that like will one up her joke, and kind of like, or yes and her yes. joke, and then she like is like, oh, he gets me, or he'll make a joke.
Yeah.
Like there's this, oh my God, there's this incredible brunch scene. It's so, they have this first date that goes really well, and then they go on a second date where Albert invites Eva over for brunch, and it's, man, did Nicole capture the male, like a male apartment or a male home? So,
oh my God. Well,
there's no carpets, you know, there's no carpets. There's no colors besides black and brown.
He's in his pajamas, nothing on the which wall. Literally, and I'm so sorry if you're listening, but just happened to me. I showed up and they were like, oh, I thought we were doing more casual.
Yeah, she Eva shows funny. Up and she's like, has makeup and a cute outfit on for brunch. And yeah, Albert is in his pajamas. And then there's a moment, oh my God, it's so funny and awkward.
Where, oh my God.
Where Eva goes, I just saw your dick. Your pajama flap is open and I see your dick, and it's so awkward. I'm like, oh my God, this is, and everything, they play everything so grounded. And so I'm like, this is the most yes. awkward thing I've ever seen. What a nightmare. This date is going horribly. And then Albert goes, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I'll go put on some pants. And then he turns back and he goes, but did you like what you saw? And then they both laugh, and it's like, so oh, funny. It's so good. Where it's like, you see them like making a connection, and like that they kind of communicate yeah. in a similar style, and like it's so.
And they're like adults, and they're past the like, it's like they're yeah. past certain things, but they're not past certain things. And yeah. I think also like something I experienced, like being like a single adult woman now with all my, and speaking with like friends who are single. It's like, I just feel like dating can bring up a lot of like primal kind of like childlike emotions that like none yeah. of us know how to handle. Like, it's just very all on a razor's edge. And I was just like watching these two middle-aged characters go through that and be like wiser from their experience, but also experiencing those emotions was just really extremely cathartic. And then another thing, I mean, I will say, so upon the second watch, it's like, it was that like a new understanding of what they're going through, being like closer to their age was fascinating. I mean, I love this type of film, and I was honestly blown away by the casting. Also just being an actor in Los Angeles, because it's like from top to bottom, it was so good where you're like, yeah. like I was like, oh my God, it's like how incredible that it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus, James Gandolfini, Toni Collette, Catherine Keener, like I love all of them. And then even like the smaller characters where it's like Michaela Watkins, Becky Drysdale was in it. Who's just like oh, yeah. a really fantastic comedian. Like
yeah.
Jessica St. Clair, just like all of even the smaller roles were just, and honestly, I will say for 2013, it was cast with so many incredible female actors, like Amy Landecker, who is in Transparent. Like it was just crazy to see the casting, it's like Sarah Burns, like all these people that would eventually become Kathleen Rose Perkins, who was in Episodes. So all these like actresses who would like become like more complex characters in other shows, just peppering the entire film. I just was like, God, that made me feel like it was so special.
Yeah.
That every side character was thoughtfully cast.
That's kind of like, you know, after watching this movie, I read more about the director, Nicole Holofcener. God, I just butchered her name. I'm so sorry.
I know. We're so sorry, Nicole. We adore you.
The F next to the C is kind of tripping me up a little bit.
We're not used
to it. But I was looking into her background, and like she is known for doing like these very like indie movies that focus on like modern women, and that she writes modern women really well. And like a bunch of her other movies, although they are like super low budget, like I think this was $8 million.
Wow.
I think this was $8 million. I should double check. But like her movies are lower budget, but she writes her characters so well that big stars want to do them, especially if like, think about like in 2013, I mean, like we just watched in 2010, we watched When in Rome, a movie that came out in 2010, and we saw Angelica Houston play this older female character that was just two-dimensional. It was just so two-dimensional and not interesting at all. It was a caricature. And if you're a star like that and you read a script with a character like Eva, who's this complex, interesting, three-dimensional woman, even if the budget's smaller, you're going to be like, yeah, that's something I can like get my teeth into and like really – I can see why a bunch of stars want to sign onto her movies because they're so well written.
Oh my God. I couldn't agree more. I was texting someone while I was watching it. And at one point I was like because basically there's like, it's this like, what would you call it? Like a comedy of errors basically? I don't know.
It's like, I would say a farce. Like it starts off with like one lie and then it kind of snowballs because it's just Eva trying to keep up this like lie that she doesn't know Albert, yes, and that she doesn't know Marianne. And so it kind of snowballs into she has to like eventually come out with the truth in a big speech being like, so it turns out Marianne, all those questions I was asking about your ex-husband, I was asking them because I'm dating him and Albert. All these weird things I was judging you about, I was judging you about them because your wife kind of primed me and told me about these weird things you do. And now I think they're weird because I respect her opinion.
Yes. And I was like, I texted someone like during the point where that all comes out. And I was just like, I've never been more uncomfortable in any rom-com in my, like, I think this is the most uncomfortable I've ever felt in any rom-com in the best way. Like I was like, cause like also it's so grounded and you're watching this woman try to keep up the lie at first in the most grounded, horrific way.
It's so
you've ever seen.
I had to pause it and take like several deep breaths and like kind of like walk away and then come back. And it's like, and it's exactly what you said. It's because everything is so grounded and everything feels so real. You know, usually in these like kind of awkward moments in rom-coms, it doesn't feel as grounded. So it's like when these like big confessions come out, you're like, oh, whatever, you know, like there's not as much stakes, but because it feels like you're watching real life and like it's so, so awkward.
That's such a great way of putting it, Allie. Like in a lot of these, because it's like this is like it's like a really interesting spin on a trope, and it may not be intentional, but I do think it's a bit of a spin on the trope of like it's almost like The Bet, or like it just feels in the family of like they're like the big lie in the rom-coms where it's like, oh, we have to pretend to date. Oh, there's a bet. Like, oh,
yes. Yeah.
It's like a reverse like Love Hard, yeah, too. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm thinking. I'm thinking of the moment in Love Hard when Nina Dobrev's character comes clean, and it's still uncomfortable because Josh's parents were there, but it's still the stakes were not as high as this grounded moment where it's just Eva lying, just failing to lie to Marianne and Albert to their faces in front of their daughter. Like it was just,
I think it's also, I think it was so awkward too, because they're adults and you would think like, oh, we're above this. Like this kind of like situation that we're in right now, that's something that like 20 something year olds would do. But here we are, you know, in our 50s.
Late 40s, 50s.
Still doing like the same kind of childish shit. It's just like, oh my God.
Yes.
And also there's something too about like Albert's character too, and just the way that James Gandolfini played him in such a like gentle way where you just
he's so tender,
he's so vulnerable, he knows exactly who he is, he doesn't try to be anything less, and he like loves who he is. There's this scene, oh my God, it's like he is at his job and he's a historian, but he's like a TV historian. And he's showing Eva around. And it's obviously not a glamorous job at all. He loves it. And he loves the job and he's so proud of it. And he's so interested in TV history. And he can name like what cartoons came out in what year. And it's just the most precious thing in the world. And he's being so vulnerable in a way that you just never see in any kind of male character in a rom-com. Like usually it's like, my dad died, vulnerable moment. And from page one, Albert's character, Albert, you know, is
just the way he is.
So
you're
vulnerable.
So right, Allie. Like when they're at the party and Eva's friend is like, oh, Eva was just saying she's not attracted to anybody here. And that the way that he takes it on the chin is like, yeah, me neither. And then they like, yeah. And then it's just, I agree with you. I've never seen a male lead in a rom-com played this way.
Yeah.
And it melts my heart. Like it was so beautiful. And then it was so then painful when she started. I mean, the worst, oh my God, the worst was the sex scene. Because Catherine Keener's character Marianne told Eva at one point that like he was like a clown in the bedroom and just was like very clumsy, and then they'd Eva and Albert had been having a good sex life, and then all of a sudden Eva's like, oh, you did this, and it's like so heartbreaking.
Keep going.
Oh, no, no. And I was going to say, and that reminds me of a central, I think there's like two very interesting central themes that really speak to me on a level where I'm just like, I think this movie's so special and specific. Yeah. And I just love the questions it's asking. And one is like, and I feel like this is just very relatable. And I have a lot of friends who recently have been like, I don't know, like, oh, what do you think of this person that I'm seeing, blah, 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 in a way where I'm like, where it's like that thing of like, who is considered objectively attractive by society and who are you attracted to?
Yeah.
And like that, and that balance that like lives within each of us where you're like, well, how will I stand up when it comes down to like, oh, I like a person, but what if like my community doesn't like them? Or like, what if like someone who has like, Eva imagines has a lot more status than her, Marianne, who does, she's like a famous poet, is saying all these bad things at this man and then she lets it poison her perspective of it. I thought that was just such an interesting.
It's so interesting.
Reflection on an experience we all have.
It's something I've never. I mean, I guess we've kind of seen it in rom-coms, but not to like this degree. But it's like, you know, because I'm thinking of like, She's All That. But it's like, how much do we let other people's, opinions affect? Yeah, who we love. And it's crazy because I think we all do. It's really hard not to. Like having friends, like even when you break up with someone or a relationship ends, and having friends go, oh, you could have done so much better than that. Always like,
oh my God, yeah.
Kills me inside because it's like, well, I did enjoy that relationship. And like, what do you mean that I don't think anyone's better than anyone else? It's just we're different. And it's crazy. And it's also, but you also part of you as a human too, you're like, do you like this person? I want, you know, my friends to get along with like the person I'm dating. And it's just, so many minefields.
Exactly. And then being like on the whole, just like being wanting to be just like a part of normal society or just like whatever like it is at the core of that want. And then just like watching the character of Eva who just feels like, I don't know, like she messed up so much in her first marriage or is just so terrified. Like, I love this other question it poses of like, and I never noticed the frozen yogurt scene the first time I had seen this. And it was this really beautiful metaphor where on their first date, I think they finish with frozen yogurt. Mm-hmm. And Albert is like criticizing the people who are trying all the flavors. And he's like, just put something in your bowl and see if it works. And she's like, well, maybe they want to see, you know, they want to make sure it's like the right fit. And it's because Julie Louis-Dreyfus's character, when she was younger, went all in with someone and it really didn't work out. She's like traumatized and so terrified of that happening again. And now trying to be like, maybe if I can get all the criticism from Marianne, I'll be able to tell ahead of time, you know, I'll be able to test all the flavors and tell ahead of time before I like commit to the frozen yogurt in my bowl.
Yes. It's and, her trying to protect herself.
And it's so, it's just so interesting and it makes sense and it's so relatable. And then it is, and I just do love that like general challenge of like, what are you attracted to versus what is considered attractive? And it's like, yeah, of course there are like certain societal norms in which like Albert would be poo-pooed, but they have great chemistry and he's so wonderful. And I think it's just a beautiful rom-com. It's asking really beautiful questions.
Yes.
And I love it.
Something that I wanted to circle back around to too was that this movie does such a good job like also valuing Eva's relationship with her first husband, Peter. Like there's one scene where she like is looking through her wedding album. Like she had just had dinner with Peter and his new wife. So her ex-husband and his new wife. And, you know, she was kind of bringing up old problems in the relationship, how like, and it's so funny because these problems are just so real where it's like she just like always will eat a cookie if it's in front of her and he would just bring home sweets a lot and then she would eat them and she's like, don't bring them home. And so they brought up this old petty fight and then she was looking at their wedding album and she was saying to her daughter that like, yeah, she felt that like maybe even at their wedding, she knew that maybe they weren't going to last, but it was okay because there's still really valuable things she got out of the relationship, even if it didn't last forever. And one of those things was that she got her daughter, her lovely, lovely daughter. And then one of the like final scenes in the movie when Eva and Peter are dropping off their daughter for college is you see them like they obviously don't get along, but they still respect each other and love each other. And you see them hug each other and they're like, we made a beautiful person. Like, isn't that such a cool thing that we did? And it's like, yes, yes. Like, yeah, the relationship wasn't perfect and it ended, but look what you did do. Like you made this lovely person and their daughter is so lovely. It's awesome message.
Yes. And I love that too, because I think it's like with Marianne and Albert, it's like presenting this very binary version of that to Eva's character where she's like, someone is right and someone is wrong. And she's like, and I'm going to find out who it is. Where like, to go back to that, you're talking about with when they're at the table and they're talking about how Peter would bring home sweets and bread and Eva to the new wife, Fran is like, don't you hate it when he does that? And she's just like, oh, I don't know that they're there. She's like, I don't even realize that they're there. And you just see that it's like this thing that Eva believed to be such a huge flaw because it really didn't fit with her personally. Yeah. It's just not even a big deal for someone else. And I felt like that was such a good juxtaposition of like this idea of like not good or bad, but not a good fit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like where it's like Catherine Keener and James Gandolfini's character. It's like, it had become so like, well, who's good or bad? Who's right or wrong? Catherine Keener looks like the more presentable version. So she was like swayed by that. But it's really, it's like, but what if just those two people weren't a good fit and you are a good fit for him?
Yeah.
And then I think showing her with her ex where it's like, and they weren't a good fit, but they are able to like come, that moment's so beautiful when they're just both so sad. And he's like, well, we made a really good person. It's so beautiful. And it's, I just, I love this movie's, I just love the questions it's asking, and I love the relationships it's presenting, and I think it's so cool.
It's so cool.
And can I ask you a question, Allie?
Yes.
That I'm curious, and I have ideas on, but I'm just like, why do you think she stays in the lie? Because it is like an absolute accident, right? She meets both characters at a party,
yeah,
becomes friends with Catherine Keener in this like beautiful, very relatable, like adult woman way where you're like, wow, this really cool woman wants to be my friend. I really like her. That's great. We're going to be friends. Mm-hmm. And then it's like at the same time, she's like, wow. And I started dating this really cool guy. And then I forget when she realizes, oh, it's he tells her about the guacamole thing. Like his ex-wife hated that he would separate the guacamole from the onions. And then Catherine Keener later, like a few minutes later in the next scene, is like talking to her about how her ex-husband used to do that. And then she calls him Albert. And then mm-hmm. I think the daughter, she sees that the daughter is the same and hides. And so it's like, you know, there's your moment. You probably have like 1 or 2 days to kind of like figure out how to proceed. And she commits to lying and just continuing to date him and get information from Catherine Keener. And my question is like, why do you think she does that?
I think it's fear. I think it's like, I think it's fear. And I think it's also the easier thing to do. You know what I mean? Like, it would be hard and awkward to go to Marianne and be like, hey, so this guy you've been complaining about, I just realized I'm dating your husband. And so there would be like the fear that like, oh, you know, I'm going to lose this friendship with Marianne. And this is going to be an awkward, hard conversation to have, and I'd rather just put it off. And then I think also there's a fear of like, oh, like, you know, now I don't have this stream of information to tell me, you know, if Albert's really the right guy or not. And I like still have more questions about him and whatnot. And yeah, she would have to go say, hey, Albert, I have been massaging your wife, because she's a massage therapist. Eva's a massage therapist. I've been massaging your wife, and I heard all these things about you, and now I can't get them out of my head. You know, it's just they're two hard, awkward things to do, awkward conversations to have.
Yeah.
In which she could maybe lose both of them. And so instead she kind of just stays in the lie. I do that sometimes, yeah, where I avoid, I like sometimes there'll be a conflict or a problem that will pop up. And instead of facing it, I'll just pretend like it doesn't exist. And sometimes, Mia, I'd say 1 in every 5 times, it just goes away naturally. And I go, yes. But 4 out of 5, it does, you know, come to a point where I have to face it. And it's, you know, so
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's what's so great about the movie, is it's all based on these very grounded, normal human behaviors that we do, where it's like, and I think it just is like speaking to like what's very uncomfortable about dating and making new friends, is like, there is this weird thing where you're like, oh, I don't want to like ruin it. I don't want to rock. And then that's Allie. Do you have any final thoughts before we move on to the trope counting section?
I'm trying to think. I guess my final thought is I like the way that this movie ended. I'm glad that they got back together in the end, after that really awkward moment where, you know, Eva confesses to have been kind of lying to both of them. She eventually gets back together with Albert after some time, and they just like sit on the front step together and laugh, and it's just so beautiful.
Any final thoughts, Mia, before trope time?
Yeah, I have two final thoughts, which is that Which is that I do think that this movie is pulling on like a fun element of rom-com that's it's in a very, very new way. But I do think that kind of like the happenstance mistake where she knows them both and then she commits to the lie. It does. And then she kind of was like early on was posing the question to Toni Collette of like, oh, could you imagine how much time it would save if you could like know everything about the other person? That there is almost this like very grounded magical realism, like be careful what you wish for, like
yeah.
or Cyrano thing happening that I just think is really compelling and is like a twist on the genre. And I really like. And then the only other thought I have is that Albert and Marianne's daughter is actually is another just another interesting casting choice. She's Bono's daughter in real life. Eve Houston is Bono from U2's daughter. She was in that show Behind Their Eyes on Netflix, which was kind of fun. But I was just like, I just would be like another like, what was going on with casting? Casting was what just like absolutely having a blast casting this film. Okay, well, we like to end all of our movie discussions by counting up all the familiar rom-com tropes that we spotted, and I'll start us off. But I'm a little late this week because this is a pretty unique film.
Yeah.
So I had quirky job. She's a masseuse, which is just kind of unusual.
Yeah,
but it's like a bit of like a Nicole Holofcene thing where in Friends with Money, Jennifer Aniston is like a housekeeper. Like they just like have these kind of interesting jobs with like go into other people's lives. So I think it's kind of a quirky job. And his job is super quirky.
Yeah.
A TV historian.
Can and I then just do Marianne a quick sidebar? Oh, yeah.
Please.
Can you imagine being one of those like actors that have less than five lines that get massaged by Julia? Can you imagine like, okay, and you've just been cast in a role where Julia Louis-Dreyfus is going to give you neck massages? Like,
oh my God. No, I thought about that because of Jessica St. Clair. I was like, that must have been crazy.
Yeah, that's like
to have that role where you're just acting opposite a really famous, talented actor and they're just having to massage you.
I know.
Touch your feet.
It's the life of an actor.
Fingers crossed, put Nelly in your massage roles.
I'll be massaged by someone famous. That sounds great.
I'll be massaged by someone famous. You heard it here first. I thought we had a really cute meet cute at the party where she just says, she's like, I'm just not attracted to anybody. And then Ben Falcone is like, she meets these two nice men. And then he's just like, she's not attracted to anybody here. And it's just like very uncomfortable and funny.
Yeah. It reminded me of Pride and Prejudice because it's like Mr. Darcy's like, oh, no one's here, you know, tolerable enough to tempt me. And it's like a classic kind of like rom-com meet cute where it's like one character insults the other. And then it's like, oh, and then you're face to face with the person you've just insulted, and then you kind of
regret God, that you so did that. Austin-y. Mm-hmm. It's so Austin-y. You have such a good eye for when something is like hearkening back, and you're absolutely right. It's so Pride and Prejudice, and I love it. I want to introduce a new trope I'm thinking about, Allie, and tell me what you have.
Yes,
talking loudly during a movie.
Yeah,
I just feel like that's in so many rom-coms where it's like you're talking too loud during, and it's like I have that relationship with my mom sometimes where I'm like you kind of whisper, but like yeah, I just feel like they're in rom-coms, it's like classic thing that's happening where they're in the movie and they're talking, and it's like you can't really talk during movies when you're in the theater in these wild times, but I feel like that's a rom-com trope.
And then I
think Marianne, Allie, and tell me what you think of this. I think she's good on paper friend where she's choosing the ragtag love interest or the good on paper. She's a poet with a nice house and like has Churville and
that's right.
Okay, great. So I think she's good on paper friend. And I think Toni Collette is hot mess best friend because she's like
always moving around furniture. And,
rearranging my furniture. Yeah. And then cleaning up life sequence is Eva starts like standing up for herself with her massage patients. So I feel like that's her cleaning up her life thing. And then and I actually really appreciate the nod to cleaning up your life sequence where Albert's character makes a joke that he has purchased night tables. And then Eva's like, really? And he's like, no. And that's really funny. So that's what I had. Allie, what did you have?
I have
I wrote stalking is sexy. There's just like, it's just a hint of it. Yeah. But they say like, at, you know, post breakup that they both were like driving by each other's houses, which I thought was actually really sweet. And then she's like, reasons.
Yeah, I got you see, house sometimes too.
Yeah. And then like Eva's like peeking in his house being like, I miss you. oh man. What else? I don't know. I think that
there weren't very many.
There weren't very many. I'd say that Julia's daughter was pretty grown up. Like she was more of like, I'm the adult and my mom has the issues kind of a thing. And then, there weren't. There just weren't as many.
Princess really tried on clothes, but it didn't feel like a. It didn't feel like.
Oh yeah, there was, I guess, a clothes trying on montage.
But it wasn't quite.
Yeah,
I guess it's, and I guess I won't count these, but it is a very straight and white movie.
Yeah,
I believe, which is I won't count them, but it is.
I'll have that whole there's a big confession scene where you know Julia makes that big Eva makes that big confession being like I'm lying and here's everything that's been going on.
And I think on that note, Allie, I do think that this is a nod to like what I was saying about that. I'm like, this fits into the whole the bet, the lie, like there's like the Cyrano of it all. Like there is something that is it's referencing a trope and it's very grounded and different, but I do think energetically it is connected to those tropes. So I'm going to count that. Yeah. The big lie. I'm counting it as big lie.
The big lie is good.
The big speech. Yeah. And then I guess
the big lie, the big secret.
Yeah, exactly. The secret expose, but it's just the most grounded version possible that you could see yourself kind of falling into. And then I guess grand gesture, she shows up at his house. That's a grand gesture. Yeah. She's like, hi, can I come in? So that takes us to 11.
Oh, I have one more. I have one more.
Yeah. Oh, one more to 12.
They cut to after sex a lot. Like there's like maybe like one nitty gritty kind of sex scene where like, you know, it's after Marianne. We talked about it a little bit, but like after Marianne's comments, Eva's like, oh, I'm not attracted to you anymore. But they kind of usually cut right after most of the times.
Yeah, totally. You're absolutely right, Allie. Yeah. And the only time we don't is when it's like to see what's like bad. So yeah, absolutely. So it's 12. So not very many, but I agree. It is still a rom-com. Yeah, which is, it is very dramatic, but I laughed out loud so much.
Yes.
When they were talking about like fake boobs on the first date and she was like, he was like, real ones. And he's like, I got real ones. And she was like, yeah, I got real ones. And then she like sucking her own joke. It's really good.
It's so good.
It's really, really funny. Now I think it's time to rate this rom-com. We here at PSA Love Rom-Coms have an ever-changing list of top 5 rom-coms. And as of now, here are our top 5 rom-coms. The Best Man, When Harry Met Sally, Love and Basketball, The Wedding Singer, and 10 Things I Hate About You. So now, if we so choose today, we can put an upset on that list, but we all have to unanimously agree to vote off one of those other top 5 to replace it with. So what do we think? Does an upset deserve a spot on the top 5 list? And if so, who should it knock off? Now, this is actually going to be a hard week for me, Allie, because... I know, and it's not that I think it definitely needs to go on, but I just do think it innovates the genre, and that's kind of hard for me where I'm like, you know, what we're seeing an age group that we don't normally see in a rom-com. We're seeing these very important questions asked that are very reflective of real life romantic partnership, and I think we're seeing like a massive grounding of a very overused in a fun way trope, you know, the big lie, the big deceit. And I've just never seen anything like this. And I really like it. It is extremely uncomfortable. So it's not quite the vacation we love in a rom-com. But and it, so I don't know. And if I'm coming at it from a 50-50 split of com to rom, which is my normal paradigm, no, it doesn't hit the 50-50 split. It's much more uncomfortable. than it is, you know, whimsical. But it's got merit. So I don't know. Where are you coming in this week, Allie?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Mia. It definitely innovates. I mean, this movie came out in 2013 and it is so ahead of its time. The only thing is like the energy of it. It did make me really uncomfortable at times. It made me so uncomfortable, which is like real life.
So
oh my
God.
Which
it's
is
like
so
the most uncomfortable movie.
Which, but it's, you know, it is so like real life too. Like, oh my God, I was just like meeting, I met someone online and we were like messaging each other and it was going really well. And then they said something incredibly homophobic and I was like, is this a joke? And it was not a joke. And then it was like, oh my God. And then I watched this movie and it's like, yes, this movie is just all about those awkward getting to know you conversations. And, yeah. But it was not, I mean, you know, it was stressful. but yeah, I don't know where I land on it.
I'm with you on the stress thing where it's like, you know, we do love the, one of the reasons we do love the genre is because it's a vacation, it's safe boundaries, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
And this I will say, even though I'd seen it before, I was not prepared for how much tension I was going to have to hold in my body.
Yeah. And he was so mean to Albert sometimes. Like in the second and third act. Oh, she's so mean to him. And I just
at the dinner party. And in bed, it was, you're right. Okay. For those reasons, just because we are uncomfortable in a good way that challenges us, but in a way that, you know, what The Wedding Singer doesn't do, 10 Things I Hate About You doesn't do, what Harry Met Sally doesn't do. So,
am I being too sensitive about it though? Maybe it
no,
is ground.
No, Allie,
it is it is groundbreaking no, and for good reasons it's groundbreaking. And
yeah. I agree with you, but I think because of that, it doesn't have to go on top five. I think it can go on my top five. You know, it can be, I think it could be top five most groundbreaking rom-coms.
You know
but
what?
It doesn't have to go on top five forever. You
okay.
Know?
If someone's listening to this and you think that Enough Said should go on the top five and you think I am too sensitive.
Please challenge us.
Please. And I'll rethink. But well, I just right, don't
you know. But I'm with
know.
You, Allie. And I literally texted someone and said, this is the most uncomfortable I've ever felt. So you're not being more sensitive than I am. You know, I just,
okay.
I think the questions it arises is really interesting. And I think the age group it's focusing on is really interesting. And I just love the writer and director, but I agree. I think it doesn't have to go on. We can put it on top five groundbreaking. I'll probably throw it on mine.
Yeah.
As like people will constantly be like, well, what's your favorite? So I was like, yeah, okay. I'll throw that in there in the rotation.
Yeah,
but it's really an amazing film. It's really an amazing rom-com, and I'm really glad we watched it. I'm so sorry to warn you. I forgot.
Me too. I'm so glad we watched it. And yeah, I just think the rewatchability is not. It's just not as rewatchable as our other top five.
You're so right. This is not a laundry rom-com. It's not a taxes rom-com. This is like a brace yourself with a scotch rom-com. Because it's very real. It's very real.
But really good. And I'm so glad that you suggested to watch it.
Thank you.
And speaking of how grounded this movie is, let's get even more grounded with a reality check, okay?
Yes, what a transition. We love to see it.
Thank you. In this segment, we test out the tropes and plot devices and the rom-coms we've just watched and see if they hold up in the real world. In the rom-com, Enough Said, there's a plot device where Eva lets Marianne's opinion of Albert affect the way she feels about him. Is this something that's ever happened to us? Allie and Mia?
Oh my God. Oh my God. And in absolute theme with the film, what a real question.
Yes.
Right?
All the time.
I mean, I think that it's such a human element of the film. Like, absolutely.
It's, yeah.
And I would say just in general, like the one time I like really, really, really like fell in love. Like, I feel like I was constantly confronted with that feeling of like, oh God, like I really like this person. And like, we get along really well, but like, maybe they're not like totally in line with like my friend group at the time, and having to like navigate what that's like. It's very challenging. And I think honestly, this is probably something that like stifles a lot of relationships, because it is kind of like a weird hurdle you have to get through, is like when you decide you really like someone. I feel like this is like a obstacle that comes up. Have you, Allie?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's so, I mean, for me, it's always like the first thing I always think about is like when I introduce my parents to someone, and even, you know, and they know, you know, they're not like, oh, this person's, you know, bad, or we don't like this person. They would never say that with words, but you know what I mean? You can see, you have, you know, I have two eyes. And so it's always like, for so long, you know, I was always like, what do my parents think of this person? What do my parents think of this person? And I'm trying to, you know, be like, well, Allie, what do you think of this person? And trying to look at someone just, you know. But you want it all, though, don't you? You just want everyone to get along and like each other. And so it's...
Totally. It's so complicated. Oh my God. No, I one time, oh my God, this reminds me of like, this was such a good lesson for me, is there was a, oh my God, in college. Okay. I was seeing this guy who was like really lovely. And from my perspective was like a really lovely, attractive person. And I had a friend at the time who was like, out of like the blue, we were talking about him, and I was sort of being like, yeah, and I'm not quite sure about him because of X, Y, and Z. And she was like, and he's so ugly. And I was like, and I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, oh my God, wait, like it's and I, because this is just how we all are. She's like presenting it as an objective fact. And I was sort of like, and it really made me be like, reconsider and be like, wait, is he really unattractive? And I didn't notice. Like, I think he's really attractive. Like, okay, interesting. And then it like took me months to realize, like, but like months later, she was, had been hooking up with this guy for a really long time that like I would never in a million years find attractive. And it was this lesson of just like, oh my God, like, why am I taking advice from anyone, you know, on like who's attractive and who's not, like who she finds attractive, I don't find attractive at all. And I really thought this person was very attractive, and I really let it convince me that I was like, oh, I'm doing something wrong. And it was one of the things that I was like, and I don't think she meant any harm. And I think she was coming from a place of, if I don't find them attractive, that probably just means they're objectively attractive. But I think it's like, that was like a very good lesson in being like, oh, you just really kind of have to like go on your own, trust your own perspective and instinct. And that like will lead to like more like lovely, authentic relationships.
Yeah.
Everyone has an opinion. Everyone has an opinion. But also, you know, if you're dating, oh, go ahead.
Well, everyone has their own opinion. Yeah. And the thing is too, like, you'll figure that stuff out on your own too. Cause I'm about to give an example where I like had a crush on this person. I thought that they were really cool. And then I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, and I was like, oh, I kind of like this person. And our mutual friend was like, oh, well, they're unvaccinated. And they don't believe in getting vaccinated. And then I was like,
oh my God.
Wow. And that was an example where I was kind of like, okay.
But you know, that's a moment where the community is helping people.
That's good too.
I think that's a good point, Alex, because that's what I was saying, was like, I was literally being like, but there are sometimes like, some people are a little off, and you do need people to point that out. It's a really delicate balance.
It's such
wild.
A delicate balance. And I don't, you know, because that clearly I was like, okay, that is, you know, I am glad that you told me that.
It was a delicate balance, like trust yourself, but also find out who's vaccinated. Oh my God. Well, Yeah. I think reality does check out. And I think we had really sort of good examples from all sides. And I just hope you listen to your heart, but also the CDC. thank you for listening to the podcast. We have a new episode out every week. And remember to subscribe and rate. And we are brought to you by Campfire Media.
And P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
I'm Brian Husky. I'm bald.
And I'm Charlie Sanders, and I'm also bald. And we host Bald Talk on the Campfire Media Network.
Bald Talk is the podcast where two bald comedians talk to anyone bald about being bald.
But this show isn't just for baldies, Brian. Harrows will love it too.
Bald Talk gets into vulnerability, vanity, insecurity, and self-acceptance, reminding us that we all have our respective bald spots. Not that bald spots are a bad thing.
No way. I mean, my entire head is one big bald spot.
It is one huge, beautiful bald spot, Charlie.
Get Bald Talk on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, I have like a little bit of hair, but not like you. Like, you're really bald.
I'm truly bald.
Great. I mean, it's
I'm
great.
Balder than it. You.
You are balder than me.
Only on Bald Talk.
Campfire.